Good morning.
The past 2 weeks, we've discussed the sugya of Yair and Mavriach Ari. And the focus was always when one person went ahead, provided a service, improved someone else's property, protected them from harm. They were a Yairid. One person provided service to another person. So although he was not asked, he wasn't hired, we discussed the parameters when he is entitled to be paid and when not. Mavriach Ari was a related sugya, but Mavriach Ari dealt with not a question of providing a service, rather was a question of protecting them from harm. A lion escaped from the zoo, you went ahead, you were Mavriach, you chased it away, and there, as we discussed, you're not entitled to be repaid unless there was a vaday hezek, unless the damage certainly would have happened. If there's any suffix, if there's any doubt, then we say tough luck. You had no one asked you to get involved. You may have been afraid, you may have had good intentions, but you cannot demand compensation. Today we're going to start discussing the opposite case. And that is not when one person goes ahead and proactively provides a service to another. We're going to talk about when one person on his own takes a hana, takes a benefit from the owner, from a third party. Now, as we're going to see, there are many, many cases where this comes up, where one person is benefiting from another person. Some common examples that come up are using someone else's Wi-Fi, where you're benefiting from it, you're getting a hana, but there's certainly no contract, there was no heskim, there's no agreement. And the question is, do you have liability to pay because you've benefited from another person's assets, from another person's belongings? Now, before we get back to that case, we're going to have to go through the sugya of Mishtarashi, the sugya of Nana, and then the sugya of Kaifan Amid Dostoyim. So it will probably take us the next two shiurim to get to the halacha l'maisa, but let's begin. The first sugya, the first gemara that we need to go through is the gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph. It discusses the concept of Mishtarashi. And over here, the Gemara has a very interesting concept. A person had tzvua, he had peiros, and he owed back taxes. So sure enough, one day, the Beis HaMelech comes in, the IRS comes in, and they seize all the fruits for payment. Now, in these fruits, you had matnas kahuna. In general, if you have matnas kahuna and a person eats it, or if a person goes ahead, takes the matnas kahuna and burns it, the halacha is, or this gemara is assuming, it's a mamon she'ein le'tovim. There's no specific kohen that has rights to this matnas kahuna. So if you ate it or if you destroyed it, no one can bring you to bezdin and no one can force you to pay. Nevertheless, the gemara says, that if the IRS comes in and seizes this matnas kahuna for your tax debt, the halacha is you have to replace that matnas kahuna. You have to take the same amount and give it to a kohen, trumas, maisus, whatever it is. Why? So the Gemara explains there's a concept called mishtarshi. Had this matnas kahuna not been sitting on your field, what would have happened? The IRS would have seized your car. They would have taken your tzvua, your peiros. Because the matnas kahuna was lying there, was more accessible, the government took the matnas kahuna in place of taking your tzvua, your peiros. Since these matnas kahuna went ahead and directly saved you from that amount, from your assets being seized, we say it is mishtarshi. And we say that matnas kahuna, the kohen, has the rights to the equivalent amount of assets that you would have lost had this not been here. So this is the concept of mishtarshi. If someone else's money saves you money, the halacha is it's mishtarashi, and you have a responsibility to pay. Now the Gemara makes a very interesting distinction. The Gemara says this applies only you're late on your taxes. The IRS comes, they're looking for your assets, they seize the matnas kahuna. Since this matnas kahuna saved you, because if not for that, they would have just grabbed your car, they would have taken something that belonged to you. That's mishtarashi, and you have to make up the difference. What happens if the case is a bit different? It's not the IRS that came down to seize it. There's a gangster. There's a you forgot to pay the mafia protection money, and they come down looking for you. They come down, the ganovim. They come with their guns, with their big brawny people. They're going to collect a certain, you know, they're going to collect whatever their dues are. And instead of grabbing your thing, they by mistake grab something that belongs to the kohen, that belongs to your neighbor. It's not yours. Do you now have a responsibility to repay this friend, this neighbor, whoever below, or the kohen, for the fact that he lost and you gained? So we hear the Gemara says no. Because in this case, it's true the mafia fellow was looking for you, and he was looking for your assets. But did you owe the money to him? No, there's no choif. You didn't owe anything to him. What happened? What happened is that you have bad mazel, and the gangster was looking for you to try to steal your money. What did he do? Instead of stealing your money, he stole the kohen's money. He stole your neighbor's money. But the pshat over here is not that your friend's money went to pay your debt. What happened is that the gangster that was going to steal from you stole from your friend. Now your friend's thing happened to have been on your property. And that probably is why the gangster took it. He thought it was yours. But since the bottom line is there was no, you haven't satisfied your debt with someone else's assets. What happened over here is the opposite. Really, there's a gangster that thought he was stealing from you, and at the end he really stole from someone else. So there you would have absolutely no liability to this friend. Now obviously if you're a shomer, if you were negligent, we can talk about Hilchos Shmirah. If you went ahead and you put it in a place where the gangster would find it, perhaps you're a mazik. We can talk about torts. But the fact that you were saved, that this gangster took this and went home happy, and otherwise he would have gone after you, that is not mishtarshi because you didn't actually owe the money. Now Tosis makes another important point. We mentioned earlier that if a person eats matnas kahuna, he doesn't have to pay. Why? Because it's mamach ein lo tovim. Fractaisvis, why isn't it mishtarshi? It's lunchtime. You're hungry. You went ahead, you ate the matnas kahuna. Had you not eaten the matnas kahuna, what would you have done? You would have gone home, opened the refrigerator, and eaten something that you had. By eating the matnas kahuna, you're now saving yourself the money. Now you don't have to eat your food. So why don't we say mishtarshi? Zaktaisis is a basic difference. It's true you're hungry, and it's true there's a reasonably good chance everyone after the shiur is going to go home, they're going to eat lunch. But if you wanted to, you could fast. It's probably not a bad idea. Go on a diet, lose a little weight. So although chances are you won't, but it's not we can't say the fact that you've eaten the matnas kahuna, you've directly saved yourself money. Because you didn't have to eat, you could have fasted, and you didn't have to spend that money. Whenever it's not guaranteed, it's not 100%, the concept of mishtarshi does not apply. It's only when the IRS is coming, when the tax man comes to your house, he's not leaving without his money. Either he's taking the truma, he's taking your car, he's taking something else, he's not leaving. So in that case, since he took the matnas kahuna, and by that you've saved money, that's mishtarshi, and that there you have to pay. However, by eating matnas kahuna, since you did not have to eat, there, the concept of mishtashi would not apply, and there would be no chiyuv.
If the car is letting you drive over the taxes,
the same halacha, because had they not taken the truma, they would have taken your car. So the truma has saved you.
They always could have.
But since they took this, and by taking the truma, they now released you from the chiyuv that they would have collected from your car. So it's mishtarshi, and that's the case where you have to pay. No. You don't need that. You have 10 bushels of wheat. They happen to have taken the one that has truma in it. So whatever they took, there's mishtarshi. Had they not taken this, they would have taken yours, and therefore you'd have to pay.
There's no mazal
garam. No, mazal garam is only when there's a gangster coming. So there, if the gangster takes my thing, that's my mazel. If he takes your thing that's in my house, that's your mazel. However, if I owe the money, and they come to collect money that they're entitled to, and they take your thing, we say that was in place of mine, and that's mishtarshi. Now, in Siman Ayin Beis, the Mechaber has an interesting case. a person borrowed money from a guy, and he gave collateral. He pledged collateral. Now, the collateral was worth a lot more than loan. So what happened is that his friend also needed to borrow money. And he said, listen, you have this collateral locked up by the guy anyway. Let me borrow against your collateral also. So the person said, no problem. It's Zenan of Zelech Chaser. Go ahead. Use my thing as collateral. So the fellow, second person went. He borrowed money. And now there are two debts to the guy against the same piece of collateral. I don't mean the halacha. He said no, he gave him permission to do this. What happened then is the collateral got destroyed. So the guy was not going to pay the owner for the value of the collateral, but he wasn't going to sue the borrowers either because the borrower had a defense. You took collateral. You're not returning the collateral. Therefore, we don't have to pay you. So what happened is that the owner of the item went to the second person and said, listen, you borrowed $50,000 against my collateral. My collateral burnt down, and because of that, you are now released. You don't have to pay back the debt. It's mishtarshi, and I want you to pay me that $50,000 that I saved you. So over here, although the Shaar Mishpat is Blayb Sarachiyim, but over here, the Mechaber, and the way the Erech Shai explains it, says there's no mishtarshi over here. Because mishtarshi is, I owe money to the IRS. The IRS comes down to my field. They can take the tefuah that belongs to me. They can take the tefuah that belongs to the kayin. When they take the kayin's tefuah and leave mine there and leave it for me to keep, I am directly saving money. The kayin is losing his money. I have to reimburse the kayin for the loss. My she'en kein, in the case of the mashkin, the collateral was there already. The collateral burned down, and that has nothing to do with me. Even if the second person had not borrowed money, the same fire would have happened, and the guy would not have refunded anything to the original borrower. So over here, although the second borrower certainly benefited, now at this point the guy has no right to sue him to repay the debt because the collateral is gone. But since he is in no way responsible for the loss, that same loss would have happened even had he never borrowed the money. Here we do not say mishtarishi, and here he would not be responsible to repay the owner of the collateral for the amount that he borrowed against it. Okay, good. So there is. We'll go through the sugya of parei achoy v'shchaveira nitvas achaveira. We'll revisit shibud de Ramnasin. When there's a guy involved, it's a little bit more complicated, but that is a good point. We'll revisit it probably not next week, but probably the week after. Now, these kinds of cases happen, unfortunately, more frequently than we would like. And that is, you will have a person who will buy a house, and he doesn't have good credit or whatever the reason is. He'll put it under someone else's name. Now, what happens if this person, who is now the title holder, the house is under his name, he goes ahead, he borrows money, or he gets sued, and now his creditors come and take away the house that belongs to this third party. So over here, technically, it really depends on the case. If the IRS, if this title holder owes taxes, and the IRS comes, and had they not taken away the house, they would have taken away another asset. This is mamish the case of mishtarshi. And since the title holder is benefiting because he's giving away someone else's house to pay off his taxes, he would now have to reimburse the real owner for whatever the loss is, whatever the value of the house that was taken away. On the other hand, if we're not dealing with an IRS, we're dealing, he gets sued, there's a frivolous lawsuit where he really doesn't owe the money, or a more difficult case, what happens if this title holder, it's true he has a lot of debts, his business went, but he declares bankruptcy. He declares bankruptcy. Now, if he declares bankruptcy, what will happen is the creditors are going to take away all of his assets. One of the assets the creditors will take away is this house that really belongs to someone else. So, the first element we have, it was taken away because of a creditor. On the other hand, part of mishtarshi is that you've saved money. The king, the IRS, instead of taking your car, took away the truma. You've saved yours, and that's why you have a chiyuv to pay. If the title holder declares bankruptcy, so if he didn't have this house under his name, what would have happened? Nothing. He just would have had less money to pay the creditors. So in such a case, although the house is taken away because of his creditor, he didn't gain anything. Because either way, he's declaring bankruptcy, either way, he's losing what he had. So in such a case where he's not gaining anything, the halakha concept of misharshti would not apply. And there would be no chiyuv. Now we would have to deal if he was negligent, if he's a mazik, if he's a shomer. But that you'll need to establish that there was a level of negligence. He's a shomer. You'll have to deal. That will be much harder to prove. But as far as the fact that you've benefited at someone else's expense, since over here, either way, he's declared bankruptcy, it's not a direct benefit, and therefore there'll be no chiyuv to pay. And again, we will have to come back to this case in 2 weeks to qualify it. There's a sugo parea choyve shachaveroi. There might be a difference between taxes and a regular debt, but we're going to put that on hold for now. So this is the sugo of mishtarshi. If you have a direct financial, direct savings because of someone else's asset, you have a responsibility to pay.
Mm-hmm. As a result, you can, let's say, you get a tax benefit.
Okay.
So isn't that also?
Okay. So there's a hanah, but he's not the owner is not billing you for that. Over here, the owner is having a law. The house is gone. So that's why he's saying, because of you, my house is gone. I want you to pay me. It's a mishtarishi. You benefited from the house being taken away. Reimburse me for that loss. That's a sugya of mishtarishi. Yeah, there's a loss. In the case of a tax benefit, there's the owner is not. Besides which, in that case, you're probably not entitled to the tax benefit. So if you steal money from the IRS using his house, he has no claim to be a partner in your crime. So it is not quite the same case. There are plenty of accountants and lawyers here. You can discuss it with them afterwards. So this is the sugya of mishtarishi, where one person is benefiting at the other person's expense. Now the truth is there is, just to illustrate how careful you have to be with these halachas, we pointed out that if it's a legitimate debt, the IRS is coming and they seize it, and the other you have a benefit, that's mishtarishi. On the other hand, if a gangster comes, you don't really owe him anything, and he comes to you after you for your assets, and he grabs something in your house that belongs to a third party, there you don't have to pay. That's not mishtarishi. You haven't saved yourself from a legitimate debt. There's no chiyuv. What's interesting is, in almost the exact same case, let's say the gangster's coming and he wants to collect his debt, or what he said, he's trying to extort money from you. Now, you happen not to have cash on you, and you try explaining it to the fellow, "I'm sorry, I left my checkbook at home, I can't pay you." The fellow sitting there with a gun is not very interested, and he's putting a lot of pressure on you. Your friend sees that your life is in danger. He comes running over and says, "Listen, let him go, I'll pay you off." Now in that case, here, this is pidyon shvuyim. This is like a shavas aveda. His life is in danger, you've rescued him. The halacha is, and again, we'll discuss this in detail in 2 weeks, but the halacha is, if I go ahead and I rescue someone, so as long as he has the money, afterwards I can tell him, I spent this money to save your life, you have to reimburse me. But over there, the pshat is, I was paid to him. I went ahead, I have a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim, I have a mitzvah shavas aveda, so if I do it, I can go ahead and turn around and ask you to reimburse me. Masha ain't came in the first case. The first case, I didn't do any pidyon shvuyim. I was sleeping at home. The gangster came to this person's house and grabbed my thing. Now, it's true, had my thing not been there, he would have grabbed his thing. Maybe had it not been there, he would have pulled out a knife and attacked the fellow. But I wasn't mekayim any pidyon. I wasn't doing any pidyon shvuyim. I wasn't doing any hashavas aveda. I had bad mouths, so the gangster stole my thing. So that's why in that case, I would not get reimbursed if the gangster just took my thing from his house. On the other hand, if I had come and I'd seen him in danger and I rescued him, there I would have a claim to be reimbursed. So this is the sugya of mishtarshi. The next set of issues that we have to deal with is the sugya of nana. What happens when one person directly benefits from someone else's money, assets, whatever it may be. Now, just to give you a Maisa Shehaya, a person was making Sheva Brachas. They were going all out. They bought beautiful platters of sushi and fancy desserts. And they didn't have enough room in their house, in the refrigerators, to keep everything. So they knocked on a neighbor's door and they asked, "Do you mind? We have a platter of sushi and a platter of cake. Do you mind holding on to it for a few days until the Sheva Brachas?" So the neighbor graciously accepted, put it downstairs in the refrigerator, and everything was wonderful. A few hours later, the neighbor's child came home from school. And he was hungry. So he went down without asking, without telling anyone. He goes down, he opens the refrigerator, and he sees, his eyes almost fall. He sees this beautiful, beautiful dessert. He couldn't hold himself back, and he helped himself to a couple pieces of cake. A few hours later, the woman's husband comes home. He had a long day at work, so after eating supper, he goes downstairs, notices there are some beautiful platters of sushi. So he helps himself. The next day, the Baal Simcha comes to pick up their stuff, and by the time they come, there's almost nothing left. And the question is, do you have to pay? And how much do you have to pay? These things cost a fortune. Had they known that it was not theirs, had they known that it belongs to someone else, they would have not eaten this amount of sushi or this amount of cake. So what kind of responsibility do you have when you had benefit, you were nana, without realizing you're taking someone else's goods? Now for this, we'll have to go through two sugyas. The first sugya is Gemara Bava Kamma, Daf Chaf, which we had in the Maror Mekoymos. The Gemara over there discusses that if you have a shor, if you have an ox walking down the street, you have another fellow who sells sushi walking in the other direction, and as they pass, the shor can't resist. He takes a bite. Now, the halacha is in general, and he was mazik, if we're talking about torts, there's no chi of shein birshus harabim. If you have food in the street and an animal eats it, there's no din mazik. Zok the Gemara, it's true there's no mazik. But on the other hand, the baal hashor, the person who owned the shor, is nana. Every day he's got to feed his ox. He's got to, it costs money to feed your animals. Now that it helped itself to some sushi, you don't have to feed it. So the Gemara says you have hana, the other person has suffered a loss, so you have to pay. How much do you have to pay? In general, most people do not feed their animals sushi. So the Gemara says it's machlokes. One man, the Amr, says you pay dmei amir. You pay the value of straw. Straw is the cheapest food around. That is what you give your animals. It's just the basic staple. You can't get away with less. So we calculate. The animal eats a dollar worth of straw a day. So today, when it ate the sushi, it happened to have been $40 worth of sushi. But the owner doesn't care how it tasted. The owner cares about one thing. I don't have to give it straw today. You saved me a dollar, so you pay him a dollar. That's the first man d'amar in the Gemara. The next shita says no. So sushi is not such a good example. The Gemara there is talking about tzoirim, where it ate barley, or if it ate chitim. The Gemara says like this. It's true some farmers give their animals straw. That's the basic staple. It can survive, and that's fine. On the other hand, if you want a gezunta ox, you want it to work hard for you, so very often it's kedai to give it a little bit better food, a little protein, a little something more substantial. So the Gemara says that if you eat sa'irim, what you do is you pay the value of this more. You can't just pay a dollar, because a dollar is for cheap food, and that's not what you got. You got more benefit. So what you do is you pay dmei sa'irim bizol. We can't make you pay the full value of the food, because who says you would have splurged on your animal? So what you do is you pay two-thirds of the value. And two-thirds, the Gemara says, is that there's an umdana, that a person who owns a shor, if he has a choice of giving straw, the basic staple, for one price, if you give him better food at a great price, Jews cannot resist the bargain. And if he gets it at 33% off, it's kedai for him to buy it and give the animal a higher class food, and therefore you pay dmei sa'irim bezol. Now in halacha, the mechaber paskins that you pay dmei armir, you just pay the... You do, sorry, the other way around. The Mechaber Pasim, you pay Dmei Basar Bezol, Rama brings down, you pay the lesser amount. So over here we see that if you have a hano, if you have a benefit, you have to pay for it. And we have a machlokes, do you pay just the basic what you saved, giving it garbage, or do you have to pay the mebasher bezol, the cheapest price of this better type of food? Now, interestingly enough, the Mashal says that it'll depend on the case. Mashal says we have to look at the farmer. If this farmer, the past 40 years, he's a cheapskate. He has never given the animal anything but straw. So Mashal says in this case, the hana over here is only straw. I don't care if it's better food. I don't care if other people are willing if they get a good deal. We see this person is cheap. That person, all he's going to give the shahr is the straw. That's all you pay for. However, the Nachas David argues, he says, loy plug. He says, we have an anan sadi. For such a cheap price, even cheap people, it's kedai for them and it's worth it for them to give their animal a little bit of a higher quality meal. So you always pay demay basar bazal. Lukuleyama, if the animal eats something expensive, but it has an allergic reaction, so even though there was nothing wrong with the food, anyone else could have eaten the food, but since the animal did not benefit, you don't have to pay anything. There's no hana. There's no benefit from it. There's actually an interesting machlokes, what happens if the animal eats? It eats lunch, and had it stopped there, the animal would have benefited, the owner would have had a hana. The animal's eyes were bigger than its stomach, and it kept on eating, and it ate, and it ate, and it ate, until it got a stomachache, it got sick. So the Marshal says, you still have to pay, because after the first course, at that point, it ate your food, and it was nana, he had a benefit. Afterwards, the animal went ahead and didn't have enough seichel, and it ate too much, and it got its stomachache. Okay, that's its problem. But since in the beginning, after the first course, it had hana, Marshal says you have to pay. Nachas David argues, Nachas David says that no. The whole reason why you pay is because you benefited from the food. We have to look at the whole meal. Since by the time it finished the meal, it was ready to throw up, it had no hana, Marshal says you don't have to pay. Then Nachas David says that in such a case, you don't have to pay. Now let's try to go back to the example that we gave. The Baal Shem Tov brought over the sushi and the cake. The child came home from school, and he ate the cake. Now, in general, this halacha of a shor going through the street doesn't really apply very much today. Most of us do not have pets. On the other hand, although none of us have pets, most of us do have children. Now, in halacha, if you think about it, your child eating something is very similar to a pet. In fact, it's more cow. Because the halacha is, if your shor eats something, you're responsible for the hezek. If your shor damages, you have to pay for the damage. If your child goes ahead and damages something, api halacha, you're not responsible. It's not you. You don't own your child. And therefore, in general, in Adam Hamazik, there's no din of Mamun Hamazik on your children. However, if your child goes ahead and eats something, it's true on Hilchos Mazik, I'm not responsible for the damage the child does, but I have to feed my children. Now that he went ahead and he ate someone else's food, I don't have to give him supper. So here, there is a shayla, you have the sugya of nana. So the halacha would be, is that if you have a child who you're mechuyev to feed, and he goes ahead, he eats someone else's food, and because of that, you saved on a meal, you would have to pay the amount that you saved. Now, on the other hand, if the case was the child already ate supper, and this was just a little bit of a snack, so there, I haven't saved anything. So although he may have eaten $10 worth of cake, but in Hilchos Mazik, I'm not the Mazik, it's the child who's a cotton. And Hilchos Nana, I didn't save any money. I anyway gave him supper, and I didn't save anything. So here, there would be no chi of Nana. That's the child. What about the husband? The husband was definitely Nana. He ate the sushi, he enjoyed it. So here, it's not a question of that I saved money that I don't have to feed my child. Here, it's a question of the person ate the sushi, he enjoyed it. On the other hand, he says, I only ate it, I thought it was free, I thought it was mine. Had I known that I have to pay someone, I wouldn't have eaten it. So over here we have a Gemara in Bava Metzia, of Hiniach Le'em Parashu'ula. A person borrowed a cow and then he died. his Yarshim were sitting there, I guess, during the Shiva. They got hungry. They saw a cow sitting around. They shechted it and they ate it. So the Gemara over there says that there's no chi of mazik. And the way the Eilu Nesivas explains, because it's an oinus. If there's a shor in your house or in the father's house, you have a right to assume it's yours. You have the right to shecht. But on the other hand, they ate the meat. They had hana from it. So over here also, you pay d'mei basar bizal. Over here, you pay two-thirds of the value of the meat. Because we presume that if you person, even though he may not have gone out to a restaurant and paid the full value of the steak, but if you want to know the value of the hana, had he found a discounted piece of meat at a third off, most people would do it. That is the value of the hana. So over here we have, if your shor eats something, there we focus on what you saved. And there we have a machlokes. Either you pay d'mei sarim bazal, or you only pay d'mei amir what you actually saved that you didn't have to feed it. If you eat something, then since you had pleasure from it, there everyone agrees you have to pay d'mei basar bazal. So going back to the case of the sushi, although you can argue that you would have never eaten the sushi had you known you had to pay for it, this is like the case of parash u'ula, and you would have to pay, because you did benefit, you did enjoy it, you would have to pay d'mei basar bazal, you would pay two-thirds of the price of the value of the sushi.
In this case, since you're not paying that to the vendor, it doesn't really matter what the person paid
to buy that. Correct. It has to do with the hanoi, is what he paid, what they paid is irrelevant. You're paying for what the market, what the, you know, two-thirds of the typical value for this piece of sushi. Correct. Your hana, it doesn't make, right, correct. Correct. The bottom line is, you had this hana, you're paying him for the hana.
I thought it was arranged nicely, so I paid for that.
So you don't have hana from that. I mean, you're actually, the lights were off, you were hoping your wife didn't catch you. So that's not the hana. The hana is the actual, the fact that you ate it, you enjoyed the taste. That's true. That's true. And everyone will agree. Everyone will agree. Feeding it sushi is overkill. The question that the machlokes in the Gemara is either you pay d'mei amir straw, the cheapest food, or how much people would pay for this better food, which is d'mei sa'irim bazal. Sushi, you're right. You won't have to. You won't pay extra. But for a person, the person's not paying because of what he saved. Person is paying because of the pleasure that he had. And that we have the other Gemara that says also d'mei basar bazal. That's also the two thirds number. Okay, very good. Very good. So I'll get that in a moment. Now, the truth is there is one other thing you have to take into account, and as we pointed out many times in Chosh and Mishpat, you know, whenever there's a story, you have to look at it from many different angles. And that is, putting aside Hochas Nene, Hochas Mazik, the other question is that the wife that accepted it probably became a Shimer. She said, give me the sushi, I'll hold on to you for a day. Now, the halacha is a shomer chinam, even though she's volunteer, she's not getting paid for it. So if she's negligent, then she has liability. So this really leads us to the next question. Is it negligent to leave a platter of sushi and cake in your refrigerator without it not being under lock and key? So it really depends on the husband. If he has a track record or a habit of raiding the refrigerator, then she was Peshaya. She had no business leaving it there without putting up a big sign, do not touch. And, you know. However, if he was normally a bit more restrained and for some reason he's, you know, was hungry, so then I don't know if it would be a Peshaya, then the Dine Shmir would not apply and we would only focus on the Nin. Now this really leads us... Oh, so like this. So we have one Sugya, Hiniyach Lem Parash Rula. If there's a cow sitting around, the father dies, the children see a cow sitting around, and they shecht it. So the other halacha is, you only pay d'mei basar bazal, you're considered an oinus. Because there's a chazaka. If your father had something, and he died, you can assume, if it was in his house, it belonged to him, there's no chi of mazik, you're an oinus gomer. Mitzad sheni, we do find in the sugya, and we'll get to the examples next week, but we find that if you... there was a case where there was a vacant house A person was going ahead, he's looking for a place to move in. Someone shows him the house, and he rents it to him, and he gives him a great price on the house. He moves in, he pays rent for a few months, and then they discover that the house did not belong to his landlord. Someone else, this house was vacant, someone got the key. He went around representing that he was the owner. He found someone to pay the rent, and he's been collecting rent on a property that did not belong to him. So halacha is, you have to go ahead, you have to pay the true owner for the full value of the rent. So the Ktzayis and the Nesivas all point out what's going on. If you go ahead and you shecht an animal and you eat it, we say, since you didn't realize that you thought it was yours, you thought it was free, you only pay mashanena, you only pay Tumei Basar Bazal, you pay this discounted rate. On the other hand, you moved into this house, you thought you were getting a great deal, because this guy have told you it was gave you a very, very, very cheap rent. And yet, once you realize who the owner is, he can demand the full market value for the rent. Why can't you say, I should only pay Tumei Basar Bazal? Well, again, there's always going to be an issue where the guy of, you know, where the guy of will play a role. That'll be a separate issue. But the question over here is, I lived in this owner, this person's property. Now, it's true I paid money to a ganav, but the owner can say, I don't care. You lived in my house, pay me rent. You thought you were paying rent to someone else? Good, so go sue that person. If I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, you go ahead, you pay me. And now, then you're crossing the bracket, there are no tolls on the Brooklyn Bridge. But if there would be tolls, then you'd say, no, you can't charge me tolls because I already bought it. So it's not going to work because you thought you bought it, but you didn't. The bottom line is it still belongs to whoever owns to the government, and if they have the right to charge you tolls or they have the right to charge you rent, you have to pay it. So over here too, the fact that a ganiv fooled you into giving money for a property that didn't belong to him doesn't take away the rights of the landowner. So the Tzayis asks, what's the difference between these two cases? So one of the answers that they give is that when you find a cow in your father's house, you have a chazaka kol ma shetachas yadam harei shaloi, you have every right to assume it belongs to your father, you're an einus gomer, there's no chi of mazik, and you would have to pay. And you only have to pay as a nana, you only have to pay to make basar bazal. In the case of the ganav, there's a vacant house. This person just comes and says, would you like to rent this house for this price? So there, although many people would fall for it, the nesiva says, that's not called an einus gomer. Did you check who's on the deed? Did you verify that he actually lived there, that he's the owner? No, you didn't do anything. He gave you the keys, you moved in. So although you were fooled, although perhaps you were somewhat of an oinus, that doesn't rise to the level of an oinus king geneva. It's not enough to patter you. And there you're chayiv as a mazik. Because you lived in a house, you deprived him, you should have been able to collect rent elsewhere. Again, we'll deal with that next week. There you're a mazik. The reason why by parashu'ula is there, you're considered an oinus, you have the right to assume anything in your house belongs to you. Now, they're not mechuyiv too, but the question is, if they don't check, they just assume, he looks like an Eruv L'chayid, he has the keys, it must be his. Is that called an oinus gomer? In Uchaz Mazik, you need an oinus gomer. Even a regular oinus is not enough. So in that case, where you didn't do any, you didn't check, you don't have to check, but if you're wrong, you're not an oinus gomer. As opposed to the case of the cow, there's no way to check who owns the cow. It was in the father's rishos. You have the right to assume that it's yours. Now, circling back to the point that you made, if a person comes home and he sees a beautiful platter of sushi in his house, and he eats it, I'm not so sure that's an oinus gomer, because it's not a usual thing to happen. There must be some sort of story. There must be some sort of explanation. He should have realized it may or may not be his. And in that case, if he's not an oinus gomer, then he would be a mazik. He would have to pay the full value regardless of the hana. So even if he happens not to like sushi or didn't agree with him, if he was not an oinus gomer, if he should have realized it doesn't belong to him, there he would be liable to pay for the actual damage that he caused. Now, one last case of Nene that the Gemara discusses. Gemara talks about another case where a shor, where standing would apply by a person is walking down the street, hard pavement, and he trips. Or better yet, someone else pushes him. He goes flying. He's about to smash down onto the hard pavement and get hurt. Baruch Hashem, there's a platter of sushi there, falls on the sushi, totally destroys it, but he walks away without a scratch. So what's the din? Now, if the person just trips, he was negligent, he goes ahead, so there, he's probably a mazik. He caused damage to the sushi, he'll have to pay for the hezek. But what happens if he was pushed? It's not his fault. Someone picks you up, throws you onto the platter of sushi, or throws you onto someone else's hand. You're not a mazik, you didn't do anything. Someone else pushed you, someone else threw you onto it. But on the other hand, you were nana. Had the platter of sushi not been there, you would have fallen down, you would have broken your leg. Now that there's something nice and soft, nothing happened to you. So over here, the Gemara says, this is a case of nana, and here you would have to pay for the fact that you saved yourself, for the fact that you did not get hurt. Now the value of the nana... What? Oh, very good, very good. So the Yamshel Shlema says it depends like this. Sushi is very expensive, that's true. But doctor bills are even more expensive than that. So the Yamshel Shlema says, we look at what's more. If you would have had to pay $1,000 to get to for the person, you would have broken your leg, it would have been $1,000 of medical bills. Then, even if this is a $100 sushi platter, you have to pay the full $100 because your hana was greater than the value of the sushi, and you'd have to pay the full amount. On the other hand, if you wouldn't have broken your leg, you would have just gotten banged up a little bit. It would have only been a $50 loss. And you fell on someone's borsalino, it's a $250 hefset. Well, because you only paid the $50. You only paid the hana that you had. So if you were negligent and you fell, you're a mazik, you'll have to pay for the loss you caused. If you weren't negligent, someone pushed you, there you're only paying for the hana. So there, the Amshel Shlomo Paskins, you only pay for the actual, what you saved, the fact that you didn't get hurt. Correct. So if you want to go after the mazik... The nizik, the owner of the sushi, can definitely go after the mazik. If one person takes someone and throws them onto the platter of sushi, you can definitely go after the mazik for the full amount. The problem of... No, you can't double dip because... No, you can't. But the question is, the mazik, the same way he's a mazik, is probably a loitzayis din. And it's usually a lot easier to go after the other person. So over here, the halacha is, you can only ask him for masha nana. You can only ask him for what he actually benefited for what he saved himself. Now, what's interesting is, what happens if you get pushed, you fall on the ground, and you land on the sushi? What would have happened if the sushi was not there? So usually, nobody knows. Maybe you would have broken a leg, maybe you wouldn't have. Nobody has any way of knowing. So how do you deal with such a case? So l'chayra, if we go back to last week's chair, this should be mavriach ari. If I go ahead and rescue you from danger, so the halacha was, if the danger is certain, the lion's there, it's wreaking havoc in your field, and I get rid of it. So there, there's a shavas aveda, I get compensated. However, if the lion is still 3 miles away, it's a sadek whether he'll come or whether he won't. There in the sugya of Mavriach Ari, we learned that if I go ahead and chase it away, I can't send anyone a bill. Since it wasn't certain who asked me to get involved, I can't force you to pay. Zakti Yam Shashlim. That's only true when I on my own decide to go ahead and start chasing away lions. Since if I wouldn't have done it, maybe you would have gotten hurt, maybe you wouldn't have, it can go either way. And I did it on my own, I chose to get involved, that's Mavriach Ari, I have no claim. However, in the case of the sushi, I didn't put the sushi under your feet. It's the other way around. You fell onto my sushi. You fell into my thing. In that case, where the person didn't do it on his own, it was forced onto him, there the Yamshel Shlomo says, there it's not Mavriach Ari. There you do have to pay. And what you'll have to do is you'll have to call in an actuary and figure out how much would a person pay, he's about to fall, how much would he pay to arrange that there's a sushi platter under where he's about to land? So it's a risk, and whatever the value of that risk is, he would have to pay. But the difference between here and Mavriach Ari is that here you didn't do it on your own, here it was forced upon you, as opposed to Mavriach Ari, where you did it on it was your own decision. Now, the next... What? Now, the next group of issues that we'll have to deal with, which we'll discuss next week, is what happens by a zan nana v'zeloi chaser, and this is probably the most common shailos. What happens, we've been talking today about cases where the person who fell benefited, The owner of the sushi lost because it's totally worthless. It got eaten and it got destroyed. What will be in a case where one person benefits and the other person is not really losing? A case of Wi-Fi, or there are many other common scenarios, and that is the sugya of Zen and Zelichaser, and that we'll, Mirza Hashem, discuss next week.